So in writing this, I acknowledge the hypocrisies of trying to do good. I recognise the potential and similarities with a creative version of missionary culture or art washing. I own the fact of my position as an outsider, someone privileged with the freedom to visit and to leave. But I also understand that with skills and education come responsibilities, and with knowledge comes awareness, the awareness that creativity has repercussions, both environmental and social. That in the process of not just leaving, but returning again and again, exchange becomes an act of reciprocity. How do we deal with decline? In a culture so predicated on economic growth and extraction, the elephant in the room is the inevitable question of decline. What becomes of a place and its people when extractive economies are exhausted? I first travelled to Queenstown on the island state of Tasmania, Lutruwita, in 2014, and winding through the mountains flanked with cool temperate rainforest, Queenie, as it is affectionately known, sits within a crater-like formation, set upon a mineral-rich fault line. A visibly dead acid mine river flows through the centre of this remote post-industrial ex-mining settlement. Queenstown had the longest operational copper mine in the world, the result of over 100 years of capitalist-driven exploitation, transformed the local environment to an earth laboratory, a toxic glitch amidst World Heritage rainforests. It's surreal and at times unsettling, because it's also strangely beautiful. The surrounding hillsides are rock bare, the result of acid rain, which permeated the atmosphere through a smelting technique that subsequently melted the foliage throughout the town. I've heard claim that remediation is thwarted. And the environment is left as it is for the iconic hills to draw a modest, dark tourism crowd. The high volume of rainfall, between 2 and 3 metres each year, has eroded the topsoil down to the igneous sulfur-rich pyrite bedrocks, and when it rains, which is nearly all the time, they oxidise, leaching poisonous sulfides, and the boundary between science fiction and social reality is an optical illusion. This nude rock face has been described as a moonscape. A moonscape could be defined as an unearthly extreme, an alien topography, a complete transformation of ecology. And yet, in this so-called moonscape, in this hybrid place, a community of people choose to make a life world and call these denuded hills home. Due to the long history of boom and bust that goes hand in hand with mineral excavation and the closure of the mine, as well as the remote location of Queenie, few possibilities for alternative economies exist within the area. And as a result, many houses, as well as schools and community buildings, have become vacant. On the first trip I attended, Unconformity Festival, a contemporary art festival that explores the paradoxes of this West Coast community and contradictory landscape. The Unconformity takes its name from a geological formation where horizontally parallel strata of sedimentary rocks are deposited on tilted and eroded layers, producing an angular discordance. The festival works with a range of local as well as corporate, artistic and government partners to develop a biennial contemporary arts festival. Sometimes they even take money from the mine as part of their backing, with a long-term vision to deliver projects that seek to redefine the future of the region. In noticing a gap in youth content, I approached Unconformity to collaborate on a project partnering with Mountain Heights Public School, a kindergarten to grade 12 facility. This conversation began an ongoing relationship of exchange, and in 2016 and the years preceding, this school didn't have an art teacher or teach any art within the curriculum. This picture is of a local miner who's also an artist and some students. We went on an excursion to one of his shows. So for a time, I embedded myself within the school environment, introducing students to critical and creative processes, disrupting the curriculum and literally generating some energy in the room with a pedal-powered kinetic generator sound system I built back in 2013. Thinking through and thinking with the body, we spoke about the transferal of minerals to food, of human bodies as mineral compositions, food as energy, energy as electricity, and electrons following electrons becoming conductive, and of copper as key in the chain of communication and technology devices in power and globalization. A multi-generational association with the mining industry has defined Queenstown's identity, the community's sense of success and prosperity, the way of life and social fabric. It's also contributed to a sense of resilience and self-reliance. Robin James identifies resilience as a means to recycle damages into more resources. Sarah Ahmed notices that resilience is the requirement to take more pressure, such that the pressure can be gradually increased, or, as Ahmed recognises, that damage becomes a means by which a body, or perhaps an ecosystem, is asked to take it, or to acquire the strength to take more of it. In many cases, this leads to a point when you don't take it, when you can't take any more of it. The moment of not taking it is commonly framed as losing it, or in ecological terms, as a tipping point. Mount Lyell is a legacy mine. That's what the government calls this toxic build-up, an inheritance. This terminology eludes responsibility and casts colonial prospecting, past mismanagement and naivety to blame, dissolving both the government and current mine owners of any accountability toward ecological remediation. Thomas Gold recognised that deep subterranean environments are full with microbial life. Extremophiles living in the pores between rocks, the size of the subterranean biosphere might be equal to that of life on the surface. Diversity is also geographical. Just as on the surface, there are a handful of global species, while most are local and endemic. What lives where depends on the environment and the available energy food sources. So the rocks are alive, just like we are. This isolated posture of Queenstown fosters an inward-looking perspective, not only in the form of geological prospecting. Queenstown notably has numerous memorials dedicated to mining disasters. Stories emerge from specific histories and engender material effects. Memorials reflect important values within the community that are documented and preserved in public space. In noticing the presence of both the human and more than human trauma documented and present as survivors within the community, I began to wonder what the local young people thought about the future, that amorphous time place somewhere not yet here. Recognizing ideas as a form of visualization, I posed the question, if the future had something to tell you, what would it be? If you could call the future, what would you say? Numerous students struggle with literacy, so together we devised a word pool system from which participants could fish words to compose the content of their poems. Their works reframe legacy in relation to the life they are living. The space between documents the dispersal of plaques, memorials to the future, written by Queenstown youth and aimed discreetly to add to the public discourse of an alternative cultural political narratives. These plaques were etched with aluminium using copper sulfite and water from the Queen River, and they're peppered throughout the town. Now, 3 years on, many still remain, published in the pavement cracks and on the skins of buildings. Pyrite is also known as fool's gold, and when the glittery crystalline surface is crushed, the minerals oxidize, add water and time, and the sulfides form arsenic. The broken mountain is backfilled with a crushed pyrite stuffed into the excavated hollows, and there's approximately 6,000 years of poison still to be rinsed out. I spoke with Brenda Mooney, a chemist who's been deriving iron oxide pigments from the acid mine runoff and dreams of constructing a lid for the mountain, sealing the cap on this subterranean world by making a form of a shield or an umbrella. Students brought in fragments and samples of the surrounding hills, tiny specks which we imaged using a digital microscope and collaged onto portraits they had captured of each other. These rock faces play with identity and location, and several of these portraits were installed in empty windows of vacant houses near the school. Like the tales you hear of people who ingest incremental doses of poison to build up immunity in the hope that one day a fatal dose could be administered, their bodies would be resilient and unfazed. Houses back right onto the sludge-filled Queen River. Imagine your situated knowledge of place. Your well of being was a backyard with a river full of acid with a pH of 4, a corrosive liquid that could quite literally break down a car, and through proximity and familiarity was what you knew as normal. In her book, Mushroom at the End of the World, Anat Singh unpacks the vulnerability of complex ecological and social entanglements, paradoxical relationships between industry disturbance, ecological proliferation, political mobilisation, and what Singh calls freedom entanglements, catalysed by scarcity and capitalism, revealing a unique look at how human and more than human species adapt and at times rely upon human-engineered environments. There is an uncanny, elusive whiff of freedom in Queenstown, and it's hard to pin down or articulate. A student asked me, "Are you for or against mining?" And the directness of this question was the refreshing voice of youth. As an artist, I see my role as questioning through creative translation, personal, social, and political complexities, in the hope to develop techniques for multifaceted and nuanced understandings. Drawing on something Douglas Kahn had said, I tried to unpack the distinction between criminality and complicity. The difference, for example, between driving a car or using technology, which could be framed as complicit behaviour, and capitalist enterprising, built on a model of ever-increasing expansion and resource extraction, which could be viewed as criminal. I carefully attempted to explain my interpretation of the contradictory time in which we are enmeshed, a time when scientific knowledge is readily available, advocating for potential alternatives that could be adopted, but not taken up or listened to. Val Plumwood employed the term and concept hyper-separation as a way to discuss the structure and dominance an imbalance of power that underpins Western binaries, and how the construction of these binaries frame the exploitation of the environment as a dualistic opposition. Some examples include nature, culture, male, female, matter, mind, savage, civilized. Plumwood instead advocates for an ecological empathy and ethical accountability. With this in my mind, I approached the conversation. I returned to Queenie in 2018, and in between visits, I had travelled to Tamil Nadu in India to the town of Thoothukudi, where the processing plant owned by the parent company of Mount Lyell Mine is situated. Essentially, the acid rain cloud that had melted Queenstown had been shifted years earlier to this international location to process the ore. We formed a small working group and developed a project titled The Inevitable Truth, exploring local identity and relationships with the broader world, contextualised through Queenstown's extraction of minerals that are exported to India, then processed and sold to a global market. In the lead up to the project, I had made connections with community members in Thoothukudi with the hope of developing an exchange between school students in both locations. But as the process unfolded, a growing unrest developed in India with large-scale protests of 20,000 people at the mine, outraged by the environmental contamination and health impacts affecting their community. Regretfully, during these protests, unmarked police officers fired onto the crowds, killing 14 people. The contacts I had established quickly fled and relocated to elsewhere in India. And the ongoing question of what was the right thing to do in such a circumstance was omnipresent. Part of me wanted to put the project to the side to make something easy, to shift the focus and the conversation to a safer topic, away from the horror and the trouble. Instead, we spoke about an imaginary network of solidarity, of diverging personal, mechanical, and ecological networks, and of being human in a democratic country, and what this privilege might mean, symbolic and material. Collaborative learning is a process of listening to understand as opposed to listening to prove oneself right. The objective is not to consume art, but to be pressed by it. Art asks questions of us, questions that often lead to more questions. Imagination is a critical way of seeing, sensing, thinking, and dreaming that creates conditions for material interventions and political sensibilities of the world. The project outcome was a short film installed with an empty shopfront on the main street of Queenstown. The work attempted to address the complexity of layers of coexistence and produce multifaceted and nuanced understandings, forms of insight and acknowledgement. At times throughout the process, requiring explanation, clarification and education. Ahmed recognises that creativity comes from how we survive a system that we cannot dismantle, by the force of our will alone, no matter how willful we are. Creative thinking as an encounter. How do we stage an encounter? Art as an encounter presents opportunities to question our most basic cultural narratives. This project looks to the past to reimagine a future that questions the Anthropocene. Downstream, about 10 k's out of Queenie, the Queen and the King River meet. The Rust Red River breaks the rainforest with its haunting gift of contamination, persistently rushing toward the ocean, spreading heavy metals like deep time fairy dust. Trees line the banks, witnesses to this disturbance. They manage the seemingly impossible and suck life out of death. This could be interpreted as a point of conflict, but the rivers know no other way than to head toward the sea, a combining of streams. This site of intermingling feels potent. How can something classed as dead be so animated by movement? Remarkably, trees line the banks of this toxic system. Could this be resilience or resistance? So to conclude, I would like to invite you all into an active doing as an extension of this thinking and sharing. And I've re-etched a series of these plaques that were written by students back in 2016. And I've put them all on, there's like a bench just out there. So while we're here in Bilbao, I invite you to select one or more than one, and we can stick them into the pavement cracks or onto the skin of buildings while we're here.